to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 857. My name, as it is in 2025, is Lisa Sheps, and I am riding solo on this New Year's Eve day. You're listening to me on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live all around the world, as Kim Simpson says, on KOOP.org.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
I look at you and from out of the blue I hear a crash, I see a flash that floods the sky.
It is Wednesday, December 31st, 2025, the very last day of this year. On today, we have another one of our forums. This time, it's directors. Everything you ever wanted to know about directors. And there'll be a modicum of talk about theater around the country, around the world, around the universe, around the globe, around wherever. In the meantime, you stick with us, and we will be right back. We're going to listen to this song. Pretty much a good deal of it. It's called Fireworks from the show Do Re Mi. That was the song Fireworks from the show Do Re Mi, which was on Broadway in 1960. Music by Julie Stein, lyrics by Betty Condon and Adolph Green, and the book is by Garson Kanin. And that was sung by Phil Silvers and Nancy Walker. I don't know that it did all that well. I don't know anything about it. But of course, it is New Year's Eve Day, and that was Fireworks. Speaking of fireworks, didn't Kim Simpson do just a wonderful job at International Folk Bazaar? I have to say that at the end of 2025, that Kim Simpson and his entire show light off my fireworks. So I hope you all enjoyed last week's stage manager forum. I hope you learned a little bit. I think that it was not nearly as long as it could have been, because there's just so much to know about a little known piece of business in the business of show. So I just thought it was a good thing to do. So we're going to be topping it off with directors basically doing the same thing. I also wondered if I can find it here. I'm going to look and see if I can find something. I don't know if y'all know, but I'm kind of addicted to TikTok, and I saw a little thing on TikTok the other day. It was a theatery thing, but it was kind of funny. This was it was from Matlin Suvari, and it's a thing on theater terms. Let's just give a listen. I'm not sure if this is going to work. If it doesn't, you'll just be out of luck for it. Here it is. Nope, it's not going to work. So never mind. You don't get to hear that. Trying to go through my computer, and I'm not quite sure how that works, so I'm not going to even worry about it. But it was funny. He did things like the theater term proscenium meant that you had family in the house, and he uses it as an adjective, like this show is so proscenium. Anyway, I'm going to just jump right to our only piece of work today. I should say that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and On the Air are not necessarily those of Co-op, its board of directors, staff, employees, volunteers, people that walk by, anybody. It's just my own silly little opinions. But here, so let's just jump right to the director's forum. Here it is. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Offstage and On the Air. We have a great panel of local and national directors here joining us to talk about what it is to be a director, what it is to be a director in Austin, et cetera, et cetera. And we have joining us, and we're all on Zoom, so I'm going to go around in the order of my Zoom. We have Bob Tolero, Patty Neff Tiven, Carl Gonzalez, Lacey Cannon Gonzalez, Mariana Tolomash, and Liz Fisher joining us. All of you, welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Yay!
Hey,
now, Bob was with us last week when we had a stage manager forum. And so Bob, like me, double duty. So I'm going to start with Bob. We started out with just a really brief who you are, how you got into directing, and then what you just love about directing, and then maybe what maybe isn't your favorite part of directing. And since Bob, you are here, we're going to start with you.
Well, I started getting into directing right out of undergrad school, and was doing a little bit here, a little bit there. Not sure if what avenue I was going to take the most of. I was at the Dallas Theater Center, and that was the Graduate School of Trinity out of San Antonio, Miss Liz, blah blah blah. And then as you finish that, you get to go whatever avenues you want to go into. So I was either in directing or stage management or acting, so I was kind of like trying to stay out of the restaurant world as much as I could by being diversified. And then I started enjoying directing more as time went on, and really kind of got interested, especially because when I graduated, I got my degree was in sign language theater. So I started a sign language theater up in Ohio. Well, I started one in Dallas. And then I went up to Ohio and was artistic director of a sign language theater and fell in love with sign and voiced theater, of course, and never lost that love. So then kept going and started directing all over Cleveland, Ohio, and doing a bunch of Shakespeare. It was just one thing, you know how one thing leads to another. I tell my students, you know, the more you do, the more you will do. So I think that kind of happens if your reputation is good. And so I started enjoying it. I enjoyed interpreting. I'm not a writer, so I'm not a playwright like Mr. Gonzalez, but I love interpreting other people's scripts. That's what a director kind of does, gets in there and makes them become alive. So that's my joy, is doing that. Maybe the hardest part, I guess, is casting. It's always so hard. You can have two people that are exactly right for the role, and what do you do? Throw a dart? What do you do? You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, casting is tough, and yet it's the cream of your show. So yeah, spend some time on it.
Yeah, that's true. Let's go to Mariana.
Thing for me, I got into directing actually during my undergrad. I got my degree from Marymount Manhattan College this past May. Wow, I can't believe it's almost been a year now since I graduated. I was primarily an actor for a very long time. I actually, similar to Carl, I was a creative action student. I worked at Creative Action as a film director, got to college, thought I'm just doing theater acting, and it was an undergrad professor of mine that said, you need to be a director. The way you talk and think is a director. You don't think like an actor. In this class, you need to think like an actor, but in all your assignments, you think like a director. And it just kind of shot off from there. I got more into my directing focus within my degree, and I believe my favorite part of directing, I think, is just being a leader, and you're really having the reinmanship of like, this is like, it's the reinmanship of finding people who you think are smart. I've always said in every rehearsal, I am never the smartest in the room, but I want to hire the people who I think are the smartest in the room, who I think will help tell the story together. And that's always been a thing, a joy of mine, is just being able to collaborate and creating a team and devising, well, not devising, but putting on a show together. Probably my least favorite. I think my least favorite sometimes can just be like the endless possibilities. I think there's lots of times with Lisa where I'd sit with her during Amy and the Orphans because she was my mentor. And I'd be like, we could do it this way or we could go this way. And I like both of these options. Both of these options will tell very different stories, and I don't know which one is the better route to go down. But I think as time goes on, I'll get over that part.
Yeah, it's actually the exciting part. Patty.
Yeah. How did I get into directing? I graduated from St. Edward's. We didn't have a directing emphasis at the time, so I was just in there as an actor. But I've actually wanted to be a director since I was a child. My parents used to call me Sarah Bernhardt because I was such a dramatic actress. And I wrote a play when I was 7 that cast myself and my brother, who's 5 years younger than I am, in this Christmas play that I wrote. And I made a production schedule. I had rehearsals planned, and of course threw all that in the trash to just do it that day in front of our family. And my brother, of course, being 5 years younger, he couldn't read. He was a toddler, so I just read the lines to him, and he acted them out. And I built a little set and everything in one day, and that was how I've been since I was like 7 years old. So I didn't know what a producer was at that time, so I thought I wanted to be a director. Turns out I'm actually kind of a producer. Anyways, I went to St. Ed's, graduated St. Edward's, and while I was there, we all had to take a directing class, and my piece, I was just amazed at what happened. I did a scene from Buried Child by Sam Shepard. I had the very famous Michael Trejo was in it. There was a lot of people that I went to St. Edward's with that I still work with today, and it's amazing. But from there, the artistic director at the time, Melba Martinez, asked me to assistant co-direct with her on a piece, which hadn't really been done much at St. Ed's. So that was exciting. So I was like, well, okay, I'll continue doing this directing thing. Moved to Dallas, did some directing there, and then coming back to Austin, I joined up with a company that was brand new called Weird City Theater and became their managing director. And we just created and did shows ourselves because it was what we wanted to see, and that's kind of where we went from there. So, anyways, that's kind of how I got into it. But I've actually seemed to fall into new work almost exclusively anymore. That's where I just fell into it that way, and I have loved it. That is just really working with a playwright, working with a cast on something brand new and fresh, and trying to bring that together. And as Mariana mentioned, collaboration is my biggest thing. So that's my favorite part, is just like Mariana said, bringing all those people into the room and creating this thing fresh from scratch is amazing. And my least favorite part, though, is actually sort of being what Lisa calls the head of that, helming a whole production. And so everything finally has to fall to me. Oh no, I have terrible ideas sometimes. And then people won't tell you you have terrible ideas because you're the director. Don't do that. I can definitely have bad ideas. Anyways, that's my favorite part and my least favorite part.
Well, you're lucky that people don't tell you you have bad ideas. People tell me I have bad ideas all the time.
Oh, come on the last show, we went all the way through to tech until I went, wait a minute, I had a terrible idea. Why didn't anybody tell me? Change everything. And it worked out.
Lacey Cannon Gonzalez.
Yeah, so I got involved in directing almost by accident. I came up in theater. I started acting at the age of 5 and performed my entire life and got into the backstage sides of things as a teenager. And I was interested in directing. And the theater that I worked at, they had a rule that you had to run lights, run sound, work backstage, and then be an assistant director before you could direct. So I had done all of those things except assistant direct. So I signed on for my first assistant directing job. And about halfway through the process, my director came up to me and said, I just got cast as the lead in a show, so you're directing now. And I had never done that. So it was complete trial by fire. We came out on the other end. I have no idea if the show was good. I do not remember, but I remember that I really loved the woman that I worked with. So that was my first foray into directing, and just steadily on and off been directing ever since. And the thing I love about directing is I was telling someone recently that it feels like an elevated way to play house that you played when you were a little girl or a little kid. So it just feels like you take all those stories that you would tell with dolls or with your friends, and you're doing that on stage. So I love that aspect of it. The thing that I really don't love sometimes is trying to get what's in my head on stage, because that can be a difficult process, and Carl knows about that. he's in the room for that a lot.
I love the analogy of the doll's house, and people aren't watching this, they're seeing it, but every single one of us went, oh yeah, totally get that. It's a beautiful analogy. Liz Fisher.
So I think my story mirrors a lot of the folks here. I started off as an actor, worked as an actor for like a decade, because I didn't study theater in college. Nobody ever pulled me aside and was like, hey, you might be a director. So I started doing that thing that I think a lot of actors did. They were looking for like a director to do like a staged reading. And that was my first sort of way in. I directed this staged reading for a company called Breaking String that I helped found as part of their New Russian Drama Festival. And the playwright, Max Kurochkin, was over from Ukraine and saw it and said, you need to do the full production of this. And I was terrified because, sure, I've been an actor, worked with a lot of really great directors and had learned a lot from all those directors, and said, let's give it a try. And I got very lucky in a cast of folks that I know and love and trusted me. We put it together and that was it. Like doing that show was the thing I was like, oh, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. Because I love being in the rehearsal room. I love trying to figure out how a play works, whether it's a new play that doesn't know what it wants to be, or an old play that's been around for a long time, but then trying to figure out how it all fits together, right? With bodies, with voices, with text, with design. And then that was part of my sort of understanding of like, there's so much that I don't know, was the thing that drove me back to go to grad school. So I went back and got my MFA in directing. And that was incredible because it gave me time and space and just reps to do a lot of different things. And because I was a sort of self-taught theater artist up to that point, I'd never really taken a theater class, like a formal theater class. I learned from watching all of the incredible art that happens in this community. And I don't think I realized in my 20s how lucky I was to be in the Austin community to see the diversity of theater that happens here, from very well done classic kitchen sinks to off the wall avant-garde art that nobody, that maybe isn't really theater, it's something kind of in between, and having that as a kind of formal education before a traditional formal education, I think infuses the Shakespeare that I do all the way to the like new plays in VR that I do, and that's pretty awesome. The thing that I dislike most about directing, well, big yeses on the casting and getting stuff out of my head, I'm gonna jump over to something we haven't talked about, which is just like the business of being a director and getting the work, right? I feel like there's so much about like how you get the job as a director that we don't really talk about in our industry so much. Because like for actors, it's like you audition, we know what that looks like, but how you get the job as a director when there's just one of you in the room, and there isn't a like, you must have X, like, can you hit that high C? Nobody cares if you can do that as a director. So the ways you get the job and what you have to do to get the job can sometimes be really, really tricky and hard.
Indeed, it is very, very tricky. Carl Gonzalez.
Hello. So I actually started off as a musician. A lot of people don't know.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to stop you there. We all started as actors, so we're going to have to kick you off of the Zoom.
Okay. Thank you. It's been fun, y'all.
Sorry. Keep going.
No, I started off as a musician, and it really, I did a little bit of acting in my church's Christmas plays, which is like, come on, that's so fun. I was the perfect sheep. I heard still the best angel that's ever been at St. Austin's Catholic Academy. And it wasn't until my first trip to New York, and I really didn't want to go to New York, but my mom was like, hey, this will be a cool opportunity. It was through a school program. And I wound up seeing Little Shop of Horrors on Broadway. And I'm like, wait, I can combine singing and I can combine acting. What's this? So I started a huge deep dive into musical theater, which is my passion now. And I wound up going to college for theater. And one of my professors, Richard Sodders at Texas State, was telling me, hey, take this directing class. So I took it, told me I had a knack for it, told me, don't worry about directing too, just graduate and start working. So I didn't listen to him and went back to being in a band and being a musician for a good while. And then I started getting involved with Teatro Vivo. My timelines might be a little messed up, I'm sorry. And I directed their New Works Festival, and I started really appreciating works that focused around Black, brown, and queer identities. And then I just continued to direct. I was gonna try acting again, and then Lisa Sheps was like, "Why don't you come and direct Anna in the Tropics?" And history was made there, and I've been kind of directing since. And one thing I love about directing is, and hopefully everyone can know what I'm talking about, is the moment when you're like, "Wow, I do not suck at this." There's always a moment in the play where you're like, "Okay, well, I'm the worst director that's ever existed," until that moment clicks. And it's probably my favorite moment. My least favorite is easily, honestly, sometimes having to get and give notes to actors and to designers who take things personally and who just work so hard on things. And I'm like, I understand how beautiful this is. It's not matching with the rest of the story. And just seeing kind of the look of defeat on their eyes, like, "Oh, we just gave it our all." And I'm like, "I am so sorry. I know you did, but it's not fitting in the world." So that's probably my least favorite.
Wonderful. And now, so for the stage managers forum, I did not participate as a stage manager, but I'm going to break that rule and participate here. Let people know, because we on off stage and on the air, we never talk about me, so it's always other people. So I'm going to take a moment to let people know where I came from. I also started as a performer like everybody else, but I got into stage management really, really fast back in New York and working in commercial theater. And stage manager was a stepping stone to direction in commercial theater. So that was my path. But I had never taken a class on direction, never read a book on direction, never did anything. And I just started doing it. I got out of doing what we call legitimate theater and started doing what we call industrials or theater for business as a stage manager and a producer. But part of that is also you're directing the talent at the same time. So I did that for 30 years. Had directed small little shows on and off, but really didn't come into my full directing power until I moved here to Austin, and started working in this community as a theater director, and really enjoy it. The thing that I find interesting, and I think that I'll probably see a lot of nods here, is that imposter syndrome that we all get. I think for me, it was pretty pronounced because I was an imposter, because I just inserted myself into it. But really enjoy it. So I'm gonna talk about two things I love, which are kind of connected. What I love the most about directing is after the show is up and watching the show and looking at all the things on stage and going, I did not make that choice. The actor brought that in. I did not make that choice. The other person brought it in. And seeing how much of this show did not necessarily have my direct thumbprint on it. Because I think a good director is a good editor. And I get really very excited about that. And the other thing I love about it is going back to when you're an actor and that feeling you get at the curtain call and how you feel so good when everybody loves your performance. But that is multiplied by every person on your team when you're the director. And that just satisfaction of knowing you have a job well done. Of course, it works the other way around as well. What I'm not so crazy about is the planning, because I'm not a planner. Consequently, I typically don't plan. My first day of rehearsal is terrifying for me because I really don't know what I'm doing when I walk in the room. That's not a good planner, which is surprising for an ex-stage manager because they are organized, but who knows? I want to start just with, well, I don't know if it's easy, but Liz talked about it a little bit, or somebody talked about it a little bit with regards to the casting process. Actors come up to me all the time and go, "What do I need to do to get you to cast me in a show?" And I just want to talk about that casting process my answer to them, by the way, is always you never know what's in the director's head. And it probably has not necessarily anything to do with talent or what you presented in your audition. It's just you didn't match what was in that director's head for that show. So keep trying. So how do y'all answer that question when an actor comes up to you and goes, how do I get cast in one of your shows? What are you looking for? When is that blanket?
I'll throw something out. I think one of the things that's really important to me, especially, and it's part of how I structure callbacks, is about communication. And I actually say this to folks when they come in, that like a lot of what happens in callbacks for me is trying to figure out how we talk to each other. Because I think that like I can give what I think is the best, most insightful note in the world, but if it doesn't make sense to that actor, then like I'm a terrible director. So callback, and like it's all about figuring out what that communication style looks like, right? And how actor can say to me, I don't understand what you're asking for, and I can understand that they don't understand what I'm saying. So I think a lot of that is figuring out like how do we work together in the room. So trying to structure those callbacks as a kind of like mini, like, this is what it's like working. And like I like to be able to talk with actors about it, of like, hey, why'd you make that choice? Oh, okay, cool. I see that. I hadn't thought about that. What if we like took that idea and like put a little this on it because this person's doing this thing over there. So trying to figure out communication styles and like, can we talk to each other, right? In a way that is beneficial for the whole room.
I think one thing too, that is hard to understand from a performer's aspect is not every performer is always going to be perfect for every role or for every single show. And that's okay. You will have your strengths as directors will have their strengths, or stage managers will have their strengths, and that's okay. The thing is like when you come into that audition room, it's just important for you to be you. And I know that might sound cheesy, but it's really important for you to present yourself as authentically who you are and perform and do your monologue as you think it would be done, because you never know when those styles are going to match up. You never know what the director's thinking. You don't know what their vision is at that point. So it's just important for you to just come in and be 100% you and do 100% what you think is the right choice.
I'd love to jump off of what Lacey just said. I think the most important thing for an actor to understand when you come into that audition room is that the director wants you to do the best job you could possibly do.
Yeah.
We want you to be comfortable. We want you to be as relaxed and not nervous. It is a conversation, like Liz said, also between actor, director, all the auditioners. We're not judging. It's not judgment. It's not judging you. It's not saying you're untalented or you don't look right or any of those things. It's, we want you to do the best and be the best you could possibly be so we can see how you can fit into the show. And we've had this experience a million times where I could cast a show 15 different ways with the different people that are in that room, and it would be an amazing show across the board every time. So just know it's not that the director's there saying you suck or you're better than this person, or it's not like that.
And if I can jump in, I feel like my favorite thing about auditions, it's not even just about auditioning for that specific project, but it's auditioning just for that person. I mean, a lot of times when I get auditions, I go off a color system. Lisa knows this, where I usually just put green, yellow, red, where I'm like, oh, I see this fit. I want to kind of go back. I don't see this fit. But a lot of times, even if people are in the red, or it's like, oh, I don't see it for this project, I really like them, and I keep a little journal of actors' information in case, like, oh, I'm going to be back in this city at this point, I'm doing this project. That person who auditioned for project A was not a fit, but for project C, they'd be really great for. And I love to send little emails of, are you at all available to audition? Or it's not an audition for that project. To me, it's like, you just weren't fit for the project, but you might be a fit for the director later.
Or another director. I mean, I know there are people on this call that like I've had emails with of like, hey, I'm looking for an actor like this. And that like, oh my God, I saw this incredible person. They weren't right for my show. Here's their information. And like, because it's all like, all of this is relational, right? Like we all know each other, even if we haven't like worked with each other. And like, we're all trying to set people up for success, even if the success isn't the show that you walked in to do.
Oh, that's my favorite, especially like I'm looking at people on this call. It's like if I were to reach out to any one of y'all and be like, hey, how's this actor? And y'all tell me, oh, they're incredible. They auditioned. I'm going to be more inclined to want to work with them. Also, if y'all are like, hey, they were pretty rude, they were very standoffish, then I'm going to be, okay, maybe not. So I think one of my other favorite things when it comes to casting is I always want that. I think we've said this too. I always want that person to be the person. It's never like, well, I don't want you to work. And also I want them to either, I forgot, Liz, I think you said this, to either fit what I have in my mind or completely change my mind. And I'm going to give just one specific example is when Lacey and I were directing Clyde's with Ground Floor Theater, we had one role that we knew, I think it was Letitia, that we knew we wanted a certain way. And then in comes walking actress Vivian Noble and completely was like, no, you're going to do it this way and you're going to cast me. And that's exactly what happened.
I love when that happens. The same thing happened with us in Fun Home and San Germain Frank.
Yeah, I concur. There's so much subjectivity. Actors don't understand there's a subjectivity level in this no matter what, because it's art. And I've had students come up and say, oh, why didn't you cast me? I said, you're a terrific actress, dot, dot, dot. And you have to make these decisions that are very hard, but then you sometimes have to do the repercussions. But yes, the surprises that walk into an audition are amazing. I directed The Hasty Heart years ago, and we could not find anyone who could do the Scottish accent. This actor came in from UT. His name is Preston Jones. He looked perfect for the role. I saw my fingers are crossed because we had no one who could do this. And he came in, he gave a very poor audition. And then he said, well, would you hold off casting for 2 weeks? I said, I can. Why? He says, I'm going to go to Scotland. And he flew to Scotland, it immersed himself in the culture and came back with the perfect dialect, and I cast him in the lead.
That's either dedication or somebody that has too much time and money.
Yes. But those surprises are just amazing when they happen.
I do love that. I will throw in, and some of you may disagree with me, and I'd love it if people did, but people ask me about just auditions in general, and my advice always is to make a bold choice. Make a bold choice. It may be the wrong one. It could backfire on you, but you will be remembered. What I have trouble with, if I have a large audition and everybody's basically doing the same thing over and over again, that person that comes in with a different take on it or makes a very strong choice, I'm going to remember them one way or the other. And from my personal point, I appreciate it even when they make a bad choice, and I will give them good marks for the attempt. How do other people feel about that?
I love it. It just reminded me of, speaking of recent, but I will never forget, specific note, Justin Smith's audition for Amy and the Orphans, in which I won't lie, that was a really hard show to cast. One, it's very specific. And I remember our audition turnout was good, but also not as big as like a musical per se. And the dad role in that show is especially very hard to cast because you have to be able to love him at the end. Even with all the faults that the parents have within that show. And I remember watching the audition with Lisa, and he came in with this intense dialect. And I sat there going, is that his natural voice? Or is this put on? But I just couldn't stop watching his tape. We later learned it was a choice, actually, that he made. He goes, oh, I don't sound anything like that. I just, when I read for this guy, I just thought, oh, this is what he sounds like. He tried doing like an upstate New York voice. He's like, no, he's just a normal Texas guy.
And turned out being a really good good choice to make for us.
Yeah, still one of my favorite.
Yeah. So, I had another really great topic I wanted to talk about, and it just disappeared out of my mind. I know what I want. I want to just hear how you self-describe your directing style. Because I think we all have them. I think... one of the things that this happened for me as a stage manager as well is I worked alongside directors, but not all that often and not as a director. And so when I started directing, I really had to make everything up myself. And the same thing when I started stage managing, I had to figure it out all myself. So I did. So what are your directing styles? And if you don't feel like you want to answer, don't. So I'm just going to leave it open to whoever wants to answer that.
Mine is collaborative. Even to the company, I cast you because you guys are smart. I'll give you a skeleton You bring the meat, you bring the muscle, you bring all the added attractions, and then we create it together. So that's mine, collaborative.
I was going to say the same thing. So Bob stole it from me. We collaborated and he took it.
I think for me, it's curious and collaborative because I want people that ask a lot of questions, because whenever I am working on a show, I will sit and read a script and Carl laughs at me because it'll take me hours, because I'll stop and I'll start researching things because I want to know every aspect. I want to know what they're talking about. If they use a word differently, I'm like, okay, well, why did they say this word? Okay, well, where are they? What does that mean here? And like all of those things. And I love actors that also, and designers too, that go in and just do that work. I remember when I assisted Carl on Anna in the Tropics, we worked with C.B. Goodman on props, and she came in and designed these labels for the cigars on stage that nobody could see except us. And I just remember looking at her going, oh, I like working with you. I like that.
I think, obviously collaborative, but one thing that I'm trying to start working on as a director is when we're doing table work and when we're discussing the show and we all have ideas, it's the director's job to make sure that we are all staying on the same idea that we agreed to. So if there's someone who's making a different decision that's not part of the idea that we all agreed to, then I'm going to be like, hey, we need to get back into our world. Few people may have heard me talk about this. It's like a big circle and you can play anywhere you in that circle. Once we start getting out of that circle, I think it's the director's job to be like, hey, we need to come back here and make sure the vision is here. And yeah.
Carl, I love that metaphor of a circle. The one that I picked up from a colleague was, because she likes to talk about it as a journey. So she always called it the avenue of correctness, right? That like the avenue has like it's a beautiful little path, and like you can be anywhere on the road, right? Like walking, but we're all like walking together, and you don't want to go off on the feeder, like stay on this one avenue so that we're I liked that idea of correctness, right? That like it's not that like it's bad, it's just like we're trying to stay together and stay correct so that like we stay unified. I love your idea of circles. I love circles.
Sorry, I was thinking about the right word for this. I kind of like what Lacey was saying, like, I love a dramaturgical approach. I love, the last show I just directed was a play called Epoxy Resin Nightmare, really cool non-linear play about mothers and daughters and the cycles of religious trauma that can go hand in hand with it. But we had to do a lot of research about like early 2000s Idaho. And I love a rehearsal where in the middle of rehearsing and blocking, you all stop just to have a really long conversation. Like a really long conversation. I will always say that even if the scene did not finish getting blocked that day, a scene can get blocked another day, but a conversation in that moment that really pertains to the story and the characters and the brains of the actors will always be my favorite type of day.
I just have to, I have to throw in my thing. People that have worked at Brown Floor Theater, I say this in every show, but I just think my particular philosophy on theater in general is that it is a benign dictatorship with the director at the helm. And I go through when I'm directing, I spend a lot of time talking about that does not mean I'm not collaborative, because I feel that I am very much so. But at the end of the day, and this is sort of where Carl was going, decisions have to be made. We have to stay inside that circle on the avenue. I'm going to use both metaphors. And at some point, you need to have, I do not believe, and I think, I don't know if anybody here works, but I do not believe the consensus method works 100% in theater. I just don't believe that. I think somebody's got to make a decision. And at least that's in the shows that I do. I mean, I think other people work within consensus and it works just fine for them.
No, Lisa, I completely agree with you on this. It's especially because as a director, you can see the whole picture. And sometimes as an actor, your job is to not see the whole picture. Your job is to concentrate on your character. What are your character's wants? What are your character's needs? And how does your character relate to other characters on the stage? And it's up to the director to make sure all that is making sense in the universe that you're creating.
Cool. We have about 5 minutes left, but I want to, and I'm going to throw this out because I thought of it and Patty made me think of it earlier, but has anybody here directed themselves in a live stage play? And if so, how was that for you?
Anybody? I definitely have.
You have?
Oh, definitely. Doing Weird City shows, that was a lot of one of us, there were two of us that helmed Weird City at the time, and my friend John Faust, one of us would be directing, the other would be in it, or it was a show that we wrote together. We were both in it and both directing ourselves or directing the other one. And it's, yes, I've done a lot of directing myself on stage. It's not my favorite. It means that just like in directing any show that I can't get that other perspective. I can't see it. I can't collaborate with somebody else. And like I mentioned, I have terrible ideas sometimes. And if nobody's there to stop me, well, that's going to be on stage. So yes, I have directed myself. Not my favorite thing.
I did the same. I'll never, ever, ever do it again. I did it on one show. Fortunately, I had a co-director and we did not have many scenes together. So we were able to direct. But one of the things that happened to me that I noticed is that the actors never got my, I'm sorry. Yeah. The actors never had my full attention as an actor, as a fellow performer until dress rehearsal night. Up until dress rehearsal, I was always looking at everybody else and I really wasn't giving. And I think that's unfair to the actors. You know, some directors do it. I don't know how they do it. I'll never do it again. I think it's damn near impossible.
That reminds me, I did do a show with Weird City that the Servant Girl Annihilator was the show. We created it. There were four actors in it, and each one had sort of a monologue scene. And it was done sort of as a haunted house situation where the audience walked through different rooms and were presented with a piece of historical fiction. And I was the last room. I was in it. I directed the rest of the piece, and it was at final dress that I went, oh, I have to do my part. I totally had not been rehearsing my scene at all because I was directing everything else. So the last minute I went, oh, I have to memorize these lines and do a show tomorrow night. So yeah, not the best choice.
Wonderful. In our last little time, is there anything else that you think that Offstage and All the Air audiences would want to know from a director? Either, you know, we've got a pretty tight-knit local scene here, but also some of us direct outside of Austin. What else are our listeners going to be interested in from a director's perspective?
Well, for me, it's being open to watch other people's work. Anna in the Tropics, brilliant piece of work. Parade. I mean, I go a lot because I learn by watching. And so know that we're not in our little cubby holes all the time, but we're out and we're fishing for ideas because we are just a collaboration of all other people's wonderful takes. So I commend all of you who have seen your work. Thanks for letting me steal things.
Funny, I went to go see a show at Austin Playhouse. It's a show that I had just recently directed, and I went there wanting to hate it because I wanted. But oh my God, the whole time I was sitting there going, God, I wish I made that choice. God, I wish I made that choice. And instead of being like unhappy that I didn't hate it, I was really pleased. I loved that I liked that production.
And Bob, you said the thing too, right? We all steal it from each other all the time. And that's the thing that's fun, is to then be able to like watch something and be like, that kind of looks like, and then to have the conversation with someone later and be like, did you? And they're like, yeah. And I think that's like, but that, to me, the highest, like that's the highest form of flattery, right?
I agree.
To be able to like make something that somebody else would even think, I want to steal that one day. Like that's magical.
I think that's something, I don't know if this is necessarily from a director's perspective, but something that I love seeing, because a lot of times competitiveness or envy is brought up, like when we talk about these things. And I saw this quote recently and I can't remember it now. So that's a great way to start it. But there's no envy or jealousy amongst true collaborators. It's just, I want to see theater makers thriving. I want to see art that's well done. I want to go and think, oh, wow, what a great idea. Oh, how could I do that? Or even if it's a show that I've directed and I go see that show somewhere else, it feels like I'm coming home in a way because you're revisiting an old show. It feels like you're seeing an old friend again. So it's just nice to see good work being done. That's what I want to see. I want to see theater makers thriving.
Earlier, I know we talked about like how hard it is as a director to get work and that whole process, because you know you're not like an actor, it's not like an audition and you bring in your 32 bar cut or your monologue. Yeah. But I feel like as someone who is just Lisa's rising director program, I think my favorite advice for that, when other people ask me like, oh, how'd you get that gig, how did you do this, obviously within reason, but just ask. My favorite thing is when I go see new work and I realize, oh, I love this playwright's writing style and the stories they tell, I've gone up to them and just say, hi, my name's Mariana Talamash. I'm a director. Here's some stuff I've done. My website. I would love to direct something of yours. Or sometimes people ask me, like, how did I get to direct Amy and the Orphans? I literally had lunch with Lisa my junior year of undergrad and was asking if I could assistant direct for her. Just can I sit in at rehearsals? Is there an internship that you have? And then Lisa brought that up. She's like, well, you could just do this instead. Because I think it's scary sometimes to ask, because then with asking comes the immediate, are you crazy? Who do you think you are? But to me, I think if you ask, it just shows you're interested.
That is true. One of the things that when you brought that up, I made me think is I want to do one of these with artistic directors, because I get this question from when I go to talk to directing classes. They say, how do we direct for you? And it's not easy, because as a artistic director, we tend to like to go back to the wells that we know. And it's hard, but very, very fruitful when you go outside of that well. So that will be the next one. I want to thank you all for taking your time on this holiday period to talk to us. And I respect all of you so much. And one of the things that Bob said is I really love seeing all of your work. I think that I can say that I've seen all of your work and have been so pleasantly, not surprised, but pleasantly taken with the caliber of work that we have here in Austin. And so thank you so much for taking time with me.
Thank you, Lisa. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Always bringing people together.
Okay, that was Lacey Cannon Gonzalez, Liz Fisher, Carl Gonzalez, Patty Nev Tiven, Mariana Talamash, Bob Talaro, and of course me. And that was our director's forum. We will be right back.
Some boys go to battle, but we're a different breed. For some are born to follow, but we were born to lead.
Okay, we are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP 91.7 on your FM dial. We stream this puppy live all across the world at koop.org. I hope you're having a good New Year's Eve day and taking this time to reflect on the year of 2025 and all the things that you are grateful for. So we'll just combine this New Year's Eve day with Thanksgiving. And let me tell you right now that I am so grateful for you, the listeners, to Offstage and On the Air and Co-op. And I just want to say, generally speaking, I am grateful to the Austin theater community for the opportunities that it has given me to do really good work and work with incredible people. So I did figure out how to get this thing to play off of my computer. So I want to play you this. It's like 20 seconds long. It's theater terms taken off of TikTok. Let's see if this works.
Theater terms you need to know. So the first is proscenium. That's when the audience is mostly friends and family instead of strangers. So you would say, my grandparents are here. This audience is so proscenium. Next is house to half. That's when the alcohol at concessions is watered down, sometimes to a factor of about 50%. So you're getting half of what you would usually get, even if it's on the house. Dry tech, pretty self-explanatory. Just don't get the tech wet. Blocking is when someone's acting too hard to the point where it's unbelievable or annoying, in which case you would be told, please stop blocking.
Okay, I realize that's a little bit of inside baseball, but I know that many people that listen to Offstage on the Air are theater people and will kind of get their jollies listening to that. I think that's kind of funny. Let's take a moment to talk about today in theater history. Of course, as you might imagine, not a lot of openings on December 31st of any year. But back in 1973, at the Palace Theater, they had An Evening with Josephine Baker, which opened in 1973, which is what I just said. So that was interesting. Other than that, we have a load of birthdays. Val Kilmer was born in 1959. Anthony Hopkins' birthday today. Adam Chandler Barat, who I don't know who that is, but I'm sure he deserves a birthday. It's Bebe Neuwirth's birthday today. She's a New Year's Eve birthday person. Danae Benton, Jewel Stein, the great composer, Micah Stock, and finally, Andy Grotolution. I don't know who that is, but what a name. Anyway, let's listen to Josephine Baker singing a song called Ram Pam Pam. Ram Pam Pam. Here it is.
Le rom-pom-pom, le petit rom-pom-pom, on peut facilement créer l'enchantement.
Okay, that's about it. That's about all I'm going to play this. We're coming up to the last 4 minutes of Offstage and on the Air on 2025. Again, I really appreciate you listening. Coming up after this is Tracy Schultz on this New Year's Eve day. He is going to tell you what's new because his show is called What's New. And I know he's going to be playing a lot of good music. I think best of music for the year. I don't know, but it's going to be really good and worthwhile sticking around and listening to. I hope you all have a great end of the year. I'm going to see y'all in 2026. I should say that song that we played at the end of the director's thing was from Operation Mincemeat. It was called Born to Lead because, you know, directors are leaders. So that's all there is to that. But I want to take this moment to say thank you to Co-op, its board of directors, its volunteers, its staff, and its underwriters for not sharing my opinions and letting me have my own opinions. But I am so grateful for the Co-op to give me the opportunity to do this. We've been doing this show for 17 years now, just coming up on our 18th year very, very soon. So that's a long time. And I am very honored that I have shared 2025 and all the years previous to that, don't make me do the math, with all of you, my lovely audience. So we are going to go away with a New Year's Eve song, sung by a Broadway legend. It is sung by Jennifer Hudson, and it is a lovely version of Auld Lang Syne. Folks, we will see you next week in 2026, next year, when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air. This is Jennifer Hudson, Auld Lang Syne. Hey, everybody. Welcome to... Nope, that was not that. So we're going to end the year with a mistake. That was good. Here it goes.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance